Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
Ooh, that was a lot of bass in that one. I am Javier.
Yeah,
Are you Batman?
I'm Batman. I'm Hoss Delgado.
This week, we are covering a cruiserweight standout from WCW and a little bit in WWE. We're looking at Billy Kidman.
A heroin addict.
It's okay. We got to talk about this. So, one, we cover wrestlers through five of their most important matches. Two, it is at no point explicitly stated that Billy Kidman is on heroin when he's part of the flock.
Okay. It has never not been officially stated that Billy Kidman was on. It's never not been, you know? They never confirm nor deny his heroin usage.
You're trying to prove a negative. We'll talk about his time in the flock. We'll talk about his time where he had a feud with Hulk Hogan. We'll talk about him going to WWE. All of that stuff is in here. Aside from the implied heroin use, what do you know about Billy Kidman?
I know that he has the most hit or miss shooting star press of all time.
Okay.
It's so weird. It's like also, I don't even know how to say this in a way that makes sense. It's like the least athletic looking shooting star press in all of wrestling.
Yeah,
it's just
fair.
It's so stiff and like weird looking. Like the way he does it is so weird. I can't even like begin to describe. Like I could think of anyone that does a shooting star press and then think of them doing it. It is significantly smoother than Billy Kidman's.
Does Shane McMahon do a shooting star press?
Yes, and it's better.
No, it's not.
It's
not.
Better. Because Shane doesn't do it in like a rehearsed way. Shane's just like, fuck it, I'm just doing it. And then he does it better. Listen, say what you want about Shane McMahon. Shane McMahon's top rope moves always end up looking pretty damn good.
It's because he, I think, has zero regard for his own body. He just doesn't care.
Yeah, that's why.
He just doesn't care.
When you don't care, it looks better.
Anything else you know about Billy Kidman before we dive in?
He was with Tori Wilson, and for that...
Yes, he was married to Tori Wilson. They were together from 1999. They got married in 2003, and they separated in mid-06, divorced in 2008. But yes, another one of those wrestling couples, Kidman and Tori Wilson. She will make an appearance on this podcast.
Yeah, I just, you know, for those who don't know, because they either are listening to this on a fully audio medium or just got their ears blown out, probably. That was a clap. I clapped for this man.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the applause. Clearly the applause.
It was an applause. Yes, yes.
Billy Kidman, real name, Peter Gruner Jr. A lot of
I'm sorry, you said what now?
Peter Gruner Jr. Born in New Haven, Connecticut. Billed from Allentown, Pennsylvania. He's from New Haven. And he was trained by Offa. He was trained by
one of
the Wild Samoans. Yeah. Isn't that wild?
He was trained by the other Roman Reigns' uncle.
Had his first match in September of 1994. And I read this from his Wikipedia. And I'm going to read you the name. And then you tell me who you think I thought it was. Against Wild Thing Dan Callis on the independent circuit.
Well, clearly you thought it was Don Callis.
Which made me lose my mind for just a second. Just a second. I was like, Billy Kidman's debut was against Don Callis? What?
No, Don Callis.
And also Billy Kidman's name then was Kid Flash. Trash. Kid Flash. That's like, hey, we have a couple of words we always use for young wrestlers. You can take two of them and you can make a nickname. He was signed to WCW in 1996 and was a gimmickless wrestler for a while. Was just in the lower card. That's what he was doing. He was just showing up, putting on matches.
Just a guy who showed up, babyface, proud and loud.
And our first match is one of those. It is WCW Saturday Night, December 14th, 1996. It is Billy Kidman going up against Dean Malenko. The Shooter!
The Shooter! The Iceman!
I still love... We did a Dean Malenko episode a long time ago. It's like episode 30-something. And you were so mad because Dean Malenko's amount of cool nicknames versus how cool he actually is entirely disproportionate.
It's not even close. Like, he's the most boring, dry, like, charismaless wrestler ever. And he's got the coolest fucking nicknames, like, of any wrestler probably ever.
The Shooter.
It's not even the Shooter. Because if it was the Shooter, it's like, okay, But it's the way that it was said. The Shooter!
Iceman and the Man of 1,000 Holds. All of
like,
those.
Come on.
Top notch. All right. The winner of this match, because it's for the Cruiserweight Championship, currently held, of course, by Dean Malenko, because Billy Kidman didn't have a gimmick, goes on to Starrcade to face Ultimo Dragon, who has 8 belts at the time.
Yeah, he has all of the titles.
Ultimo Dragon's doing his all the belts thing. What did you think seeing Billy Kidman in this match?
I mean, he looks like a fucking child. How old is he at this point?
1996. Billy Kidman is going to be 22 years old.
Fucking shit.
He's crisp. He's young. He's fast.
And that's also the crazy thing about Billy Kidman is that he was so young during his time in WCW.
Yep.
Like, and that transitions, I mean, even in WWE, like, shit, you got to think, like, he's 22 right now, but it's, some of these matches that we cover are from 2002. Like, he's 30 at that point, you know? Like, it's crazy. He was so young.
He's
so
28, yeah.
Yeah, so young, so talented, like, it's fucking crazy to me. Yeah, he's 30 for the last match that we cover.
Yeah, the last match we cover, he's 30 years old. So we get like some solid mat wrestling, leapfrog, head toss, or hip toss, leg drag from an electric chair position. Lots of cool stuff happening. Who cares? Because Dusty Rhodes is on commentary. And I can listen to this man read the phone book. I love it.
Oh, Dusty Rhodes, baby, the American dream, baby.
What'd you think of Kidman's performance here?
I mean, we just got to talk about the fact that main eventing Starrcade 1996 is Hulk Hogan versus Roddy Piper.
Yeah, commentary talks about it a lot.
I mean, there's good technical work to start the match, which is impressive because, like, you expect that obviously from Dean Malenko.
Yeah, but exactly.
I don't expect a 22-year-old high flyer to be freaking technically savvy the way he was here, going hold for hold with fucking Dean Malenko. You know. He does back-to-back head scissors that were cool. There's a fall-away slam that I know piqued your interest. You're a big fall-away slam guy.
Yeah,
break that fall-away slam, Evan.
Malenko hits a fall-away slam, and I think it's just easy because Kidman's so small. And Dean's also not that big. So it's better for Dean. He's like, I can actually do a fall-away slam here. And he just
launches that, 8.1? Is that an 8.1 on the fall-away?
I'll give it an 8.1. That sounds like the right rating.
For some reason, there is a front
an 8.1 is like an 81 in 2K. So I'm like, that's a Serge Ibaka of like a 2019 Serge Ibaka level follow-up.
Jesus. Oh my God. Okay. Yeah. Sure. That is that. Right after that, there's a nasty looking front face lock put on by Malenko. It's like the way that he's able to transition submissions to submission, hold to hold, all this stuff. It's so effortless for him. Like, so effortless, and it's
true.
Like, I don't even, like, we definitely talked about it in the Dean Malenko episode. Again, go check that one out. It was a fun time. But, like, just the way that he's able to go move, it's really, like, the skill that you see out of Malenko isn't even in the moves that he puts on himself. It's the transition period, like,
yeah,
times between them. Like, the
very
way
little wasted
from
movement, very little wasted time. Malenko's just so crisp. Good. And Kidman's doing a really good job of keeping up with him. At one point, he's firing up. He runs into the turnbuckle. Malenko gets a crossbody, but Kidman rolls through, gets the 2 count. Malenko gets sent to the outside. Kidman slides to the outside while Malenko's on the inside. They do some standing switches in the ring. Kidman reverses the vertical into some into a crossbody. Now, this is where I realize, I'm like, wow, Kidman is so crisp here. Like,
yeah,
for being this young, like he's picking everything up.
He does the Billy Gunn. Billy Gunn sell of a lariat at one point, flips all the way through that motherfucker. Yeah.
It's good stuff.
And then pretty much gets freaking halted in the most swift way possible by a nasty brainbuster from Malenko for near fall.
Yeah, it's ugly looking. Belly back suplex by Malenko. Texas Cloverleaf. He obviously retains the Cruiserweight Championship. As to be expected, he goes on to face Ultimo Dragon. And Billy Kidman would eventually find his first gimmick. And that gimmick, as we've kind of touched on, was as a member of Raven's Flock, a group we've talked about quite a bit recently because we had a Perry Saturn episode. We haven't had a Raven episode yet. I'm sure we will. But he was
Raven's just going to be multiple parts as well.
Yeah, because he's just been here forever. He constantly scratched his arms, and named his Shooting Star Press the 7-Year Itch, all of which in thinly veiled reference to his heroin addiction.
I mean, what do you want me to tell you? Heroin addict.
Kidman wasn't, the man himself was not, like, he wasn't like a method actor. Let's put that out there, okay?
Do we know that?
Nothing has been said to the opposite, so that's what I'm going with.
Yeah, but Evan, ask me if that fits my narrative.
It doesn't fit your narrative.
So then?
You're going to choose to ignore it. Kidman found not a lot of success with the group. He was kind of on the outskirts of it. He did help Perry Saturn in beating Raven to disband the Flock. Afterwards, he kind of would join the cruiserweight division as like his own independent person. He would win the Cruiserweight Championship from Juventud Guerrera, and we have a promo compilation that follows his whole journey with the Cruiserweight belt and without it. So, what'd you think of the promos from Billy Kidman?
I thought the star of these promos was Mean Gene
Okerlund.
Hold on. Wow.
I think I know the answer, but I feel like we haven't had this conversation, at least in a long time. Mean Gene is the best backstage interviewer, correct?
Well, he's the best, objectively, but he's not my favorite.
Is your favorite Renee Paquette?
No, it's Kathy Kelly.
I do love Kathy Kelly, too.
Yeah,
but that's for other reasons. Mean Gene anytime. Is so fun, and you're right, he is the star here. Billy Kidman cuts promos, and you maybe will get this reference, but you're not a big hockey guy. He cuts promos the way hockey players get interviewed. Where they're every time, if you listen to any hockey interview, they're like, oh, you know, your team's down early. How do you feel? Every hockey player is so intensely media trained that they like there's no Deion Sanders. There's no fun basketball guy. Like there's none of that. Hockey players, well, you know, we went out there. We tried our best. You know, the boys, we got to put pucks on net, get the puck in deep, really just cycle a little bit better. We'll be good for a second period. And they're just wiping their face.
I don't know what the fuck you just said.
Exactly. Kidman is just that. He's being asked questions where he could be really impassioned about stuff. And he's like, no, you know, like, I'm just going to try and do my best. And
He says he's the champion. Says he's looking forward to facing Juventud Guerrera.
Yeah.
Says Disco's mother finally threw him out of the house, and it's about time he go out on his own. Says that things weren't going well for him, Disco, that is, in the heavyweight division. And he's going a new route, but it's not going to work for him either.
Yeah, they ask about is he even going to make weight? And then the big part of this is that Gene asks about the best part of having the belt. What's the best part of having the Cruiserweight Championship?
The chicks. You get more attention. And chicks love the belt.
And Gene loses all interest in any other questions he was going to have. He's like, is that true? Does that work? Does that move work for you?
And then again, me and Gene asks him who he prefers to face. Like, who does he want to win between Hoovy and Disco? And he says he prefers Hoovy, but he'll face whoever.
And then we get to our next promo, and he's lost the belt to Hoovy. Uh-oh. Gene has followed up about how he gets chicks without the belt. Asked him how it is without the belt, and he's like, things have slowed down, but now he can rest up for the pay-per-view.
The rematch for the title will be at World War III. It says it seems like it never ends with Hoovy, but he's gonna get his title back. It says that he wants to go in because he's in the World War III match because it was 60 yeah. fucking guys. He says he wants to get in there, knock around Disco, maybe get a few eliminations, but he's focused on winning the Cruiserweight title back right now.
He would win this Cruiserweight title back in World War III. Very exciting, but he would lose it to Rey Mysterio. And then we get another promo where he's talking about how good the Cruiserweight division is, which is true. This era of the Cruiserweight division is really, really good.
Mean Gene starts off the interview by saying, "Now I don't need you or your belt."
Mean Gene is really just trying to figure out the way to pick up the chicks. You know, that's what he's doing.
He brings up the chicks again because he is an obsessed man. An obsessed, thirsty individual is Mean Gene Okerlund.
But honestly, I love that there's like a common thread between these interviews. It feels authentic. Yeah. If you were watching week to week, it's like it feels like a real thing going on. I don't know. I like that there's, instead of it just being the back to you and it's just over. Like, I don't know.
This is definitely the media trained promo, I would say.
It's very bland.
Yeah, he says a spring stampede. He has a chance to get the belt back from Rey Mysterio, and that Mysterio was the better man on the night that he lost the title. But he'll get it back at the pay-per-view. Says that because of the high-risk style of the cruiserweight division, anybody can beat anybody. He calls Rey his friend inside the ring and out. But no matter what, he's getting that title back.
And then the last promo is with Rey, and Rey and him are cruiserweight tag team champions.
I didn't know there was a cruiserweight tag title.
Yeah, they did the cruiserweight tag titles for a little. It did not catch on. It was not a very popular thing.
Rey doesn't have a mask, so if you don't want to be traumatized, stop watching.
Also, Rey is out to lunch during this promo. Rey has never been an amazing promo, but Rey is just kind of like, what, huh? What's going on?
Rey might have done heroin before this. I don't know. This is just heroin. Like,
Rey's just not, like, he's just not there. He's just like, hey, man, I don't know. I'm going to beat you.
Maybe his arm a little bit. At some point, so they're facing each other for the Cruiserweight title at Spring Stampede.
Yeah.
But they are the current Cruiserweight tag title champions. Rey says that the tag titles were something that just happened on Nitro, but that he told Billy that he'd give him another opportunity for the Cruiserweight title because, you know, I guess it's got a good guy Rey or whatever.
Yeah, nice guy Rey.
Billy says Rey's his partner, but he's looking to put that title back around his waist. Says that Rey says holding two belts kind of makes him feel special. And then Evan, what's the piece de resistance that Mean Gene finishes off with?
He's asking about the chicks again. He can't let it go. Mean Gene's going to walk over and buy a belt and be like, hey, I am the over 70 heavyweight champion.
Billy says that he doesn't think it works for Rey like it works for him and Mean Gene. And that made me fall off my chair.
Kidman's not a good promo. He's not, and that's okay. Because he's fun in the ring, and the cruiserweight division.
It's like early Brett, you know?
Kind of, yeah. And I think the hair doesn't help. All right, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we're looking at him defending the Cruiserweight Championship in WCW. Back from the break, and we are at Uncensored 1999. Billy Kidman is the Cruiserweight champ, and he is defending it against a debuting Mikey Whipwreck.
All right. So we've had a few Mikey Whipwreck matches on the pod from when we cover ECW guys.
Yep.
Explain Mikey Whipwreck to me, because I don't really get it.
So Mikey Whipwreck, to the best of my understanding, was like a guy who was just either he was working the ring crew or he was just hanging around, and then he like learned how to wrestle. And then because he was like not a trained wrestler, that was part of built into the gimmick, was like he's not supposed to be here, and he became a fan favorite because he would just like try really hard, and he got a lot better at wrestling quickly.
I mean, clearly he started his own fucking promotion. You know?
Exactly. But that was kind of the gimmick, was like he wasn't supposed to be here, and then he found himself inserted into feuds with like Steve Austin and Cactus Jack and Raven. And so
wait. The Steve Austin appearances in ECW were against Mikey Whipwreck.
I don't remember if he was against Mikey Whipwreck but somehow he does cross paths with Steve Austin at some point. Yeah. And then he came to WCW, and you know, he was not happy in WCW. He did not last very long there.
I mean, I think we covered a match where he was like being revolted on by the people. An ECW.
Whipwreck didn't get a push in the cruiserweight division. He had this big debut. He had, I think, three more pay-per-view appearances. He would often get put in the hardcore division that WCW was trying to really found. And so he's just like, this isn't what I wanted to do. So he was gone by the end of 99, and this is in March. Can we talk about Kidman's gear at this time?
Go ahead.
Jorts in a tank. And every week, jorts in the tank, every week.
And you expect me to think this guy isn't a fucking heroin addict?
Jorts in the tank for the kid. And it's
jorts and a wife beater. Let's call it what it is.
It's so confusing because I'm watching this and I'm like, this is such a weird thing to wear to wrestle. And then I look over and Mikey Whipwreck has like anime cartoon characters on his graphic tee. And I was like, I'm not even distracted. I'm not even fazed by this now. It's just, this is really popular when I was little, and you were probably too young for it. These
what,
like
tie dye?
No. These like button up shirts that would have a ton of like Japanese like anime and manga characters on them, and they would be very brightly colored, and they would have like flames and shit. And
you go, you're probably too young for this. How? What year? What is the date for this match?
1999.
Okay, but like, is it like March?
March. Yeah.
I was a year and a half.
Yeah, so too young. no, so what you're saying?
Shit.
What you're saying is I'm right.
I was still shitting myself, Evan, and having someone else clean it for me.
What did you think of this match?
This was solid work. I don't know.
I was impressed with Mikey Whipwreck, like a lot.
I thought that he was doing a lot of shit. Like he was doing stuff that you would see nowadays, where like just the guy would show up, do a bunch of random ass moves. It's like Cody when he decided to become an independent wrestler. Yeah. And then just like started busting out moves out of nowhere. Like he like now has a Cody cutter. Like what the fuck? You know?
Yeah, he's like, look how deep my bag is now.
Yeah, it's like he really opens up the bag this match. And I guess that's a really good thing. Like Billy Kidman is a person that you would want to open up the bag against because he's very good at taking moves. I found out throughout this episode. That is like the highlight of Billy Kidman to me, is he's really good at taking moves.
Yeah. Billy Kidman is, much like Dean Malenko was in his first match, Billy Kidman's an excellent dance partner by this point. And again, he's only 25 here. Not even yet.
He's in his later stage Dolph Ziggler bag.
That's true. God, Dolph is so good at that too. What spots in the match did you like? What was something you liked here?
There was a head scissors by Mikey early on here that honestly kind of floored me. He is like the least athletic looking human being to ever wrestle. Yeah. I just have to say it. Like, say what you want about like Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens, I look at him and I'm like, yeah, I could see him being like really fucking strong, or like maybe like more agile than you would think. Like, I look at Mikey Whipwreck and I'm like, this guy, I would be shocked if he could beat me in a race.
Mikey Whipwreck walked so others could run. He's the,
like genuinely.
Yeah. And he walked more athletically than we thought.
No, I'm telling you right now, put me and him in a combine, I'm smoking him in every stat. Every single one.
I think he's got you in the bench. I'm going to call it.
Nope.
I'm
telling you right now, I don't think so. Man, I'm putting up fucking 65-pound dumbbells for 10 reps, boy.
So one of the things I liked here is Whipwreck turning a Famouser into a powerbomb. I thought that was a really good counter. That happens a little bit later in the match. I thought it was really good. Kidman with a splash from the top rope. When I say the top rope, I mean the actual rope to the outside. But he didn't springboard. He was just on the rope for a long time. Very commander-esque, just like hanging on the rope. Like, yeah, no, this is fine. I'm balanced.
It's fucking commander-esque. I did not expect a commander reference on this podcast.
Well, expect the unexpected.
Did you see? Oh, my God. Where was it? Fucking Papa Tony Khan set up a triple threat between Hijo de Vikingo, Commander, and I think it was Bandido.
Jesus.
Might have been someone else, though.
I think it was Realistico, wasn't it?
It might have been Realistico. I have no idea. I think it was on for maybe Ring of Honor. It was somewhere. Oh, no. Maybe it's the first episode of Collision. I don't know. Somewhere that match is happening, and I got to go watch it. It's for the mega title.
Oh, that's going to be good. So there's a spot to the outside. Whipwreck knocks Kidman off the top into the outside. Whipwreck tries to splash him. Kidman dodges. Whipwreck goes face first into the barricade on the outside. Kidman then gets back body dropped over the barricade. Whipwreck goes for a dive over the same barricade and just misses. And I'm immediately having Ahmed Johnson flashbacks from the Chicago Street Fight. I'm like, stop doing that. There's children there. There's a guy in the crowd right there. And he's clearly getting someone to take on like a Kodak camera. He's getting someone to take photos of him with Billy Kidman behind him like, hey, look, it's me, Billy Kidman. Hey.
Yeah. One point, there's like a weird, like pendulum inverted DDT, like rope assisted. I don't really know how to explain it, but it was really fucking weird.
Yeah.
Mikey went for a slingshot suplex. Kidman turned into a DDT. Kidman went up for Kidman went up for a shooting star, but Mikey just knocked his ass out of the ring. Yep. And then Mikey went up for a dive to the outside, busted his face on the barricade.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Then they get the whole thing on the outside there.
Side Russian leg sweep, because I love a side Russian leg sweep.
Kidman does a sit-up pedigree. That's in his bag, too. I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, my God. We got to talk about this. Okay. All right. So, I thought it was better than a regular pedigree.
Yeah.
I saw that, and I was like, this, I've never seen that move before.
Yeah. And it's better than a pedigree. I agree.
I'm now a spooky boy.
Yes, your light has fallen.
My light thing fell. My light has fallen.
Yeah. If you're not watching these on YouTube, you should. It really adds to the experience. But yeah, I think yes, the pedigree is like the evolved version of the pedigree.
Someone has to do this move now.
Yeah.
Like, this is incredible.
Before we get to the finish, because we're right about there. Yeah. There is a man in the front row, and he has a shirt, and it looks like, you know, an Austin shirt, like, you know, Austin 316, whatever. Except it says Duck 24/7.
I'm sorry, you said what now?
He's got a shirt, and it just says Duck 24/7.
Duck like the animal.
Like the animal. I cannot think, and I sat there for a good while, what would inspire someone to have a shirt to say Duck 24/7. Like, even if you love ducks. But the thing is, it doesn't say ducks like you love the animal. It says duck like you like the meat.
You know, you gotta, like, you gotta pull the link for that somewhere for me, because my girlfriend's, like, obsessed with ducks.
So you think she wears a shirt that says Duck 24/7?
Hell yeah, she would wear a shirt that says ducks. More so if it said ducks.
That's 24/7. The thing is, ducks to me is the animal. Duck is the meat. And I'm like, that's weird, man. Like, duck is a good meat. I don't
know. What if his name is Duck, you know?
Then he has a whole other set of problems because he's a man named Duck.
Oi, that's like, I know it. Listen, my buddy, my coworker.
You know Duck?
Yeah, my coworker. He just goes by DK. But yeah, his name is Duck.
Okay, no, like birth certificate, baby fresh out the womb. They said, you know what this baby should be called? They said Duck.
D-U-C-K, and then it's a hyphen, and then it's like there's a whole other name. But yeah, it's Duck.
Kidman does a face buster through DK. A power bomb. No, we're going through. I can't. A man named Duck. Shooting star press. Kidman retains. The shooting star press here is not bad. I don't think it's that bad, this one.
I mean, I'm not a fan.
In terms of his shooting star presses, I thought this one was like one of the. It looked smoother than normal.
Yeah, it's just like an average thing. You know what? I don't know what you want me to tell you.
Honestly, a really good debut for Mikey Whipwreck. Oh, that was good.
Yeah.
I thought his heel work was really good. Yeah.
He's just in his bag, man.
Let's move to a very strange match that I'm sure you and I will both hate. We are at Slamboree 2000, and Billy Kidman is in a feud with Hulk Hogan. Because Billy Kidman was in the Filthy Animal. So that's the stable with Rey Mysterio and Conan and all those guys.
I thought that was all Hispanic people. Why is fucking Billy Kidman in that?
He's their emotional support white guy. I don't know what to tell you. Like, they just were like, we like this one. We'll just bring him along. And
he's their Greg. You remember how everybody hates Chris? There's just a Greg, his best friend. And then he's like the only white guy who's like fine.
So after he left the Filthy Animals, he joined the New Blood stable. Do you know of the New Blood stable?
I know that Billy Kidman's in it.
New Blood versus Millionaires Club was exactly like Everyone versus Main Event Mafia in TNA. It was, there's a bunch of old guys who run everything. They're the Millionaires Club, and then there's the New Blood. And so it was the young guys were considered the heels up against the establishment baby faces. And that's where he led to this feud with Hulk Hogan, where he actually beats Hogan 3 times in a row. Three dubs over Hogan in a row.
Billy Kidman beat Hulk Hogan 3 times in a row.
Correct.
There is a God.
At Slamboree 2000, Hogan's got his nephew Horace with him. Eric Bischoff is the special guest referee.
This was another thing I was going to bring up with you. Who the fuck is Horace Hogan?
Why can't I remember his name? Brutus the Barber Beefcake. You know how he gets jobs everywhere because he's boys with Hogan?
Uh-huh.
So imagine being less talented, but blood related.
Oh, so it's like Garrett Bischoff.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Don't like and it.
So
wish I could return it.
Hogan is dressed like Stepdad of Anarchy, and I hate it. He's got like the black pants and the black vest, and I don't know who Hulk Hogan's barber is, but honestly, the sharpness with which his hair like stops when it's coming out the back, it's
clean
line.
At that point, like, I will never be able to understand why individuals have it. Like, if you're just like bald here, just stop, just let it go. It's done.
It's done.
It's over.
You listen, lose. Evan, goodbye.
The most impressive thing about you is, and listen, people, if you're watching this on video, I can vouch for Evan. I have seen the pictures of him when he was a child. His hairline has not moved. It has been that way forever. If you've been watching these thinking, Evan, oh no, Evan's balding. Nah.
No. It's getting a little thinner up here, but like it's been about here my whole life. And it's to a point where you know when you're a kid and you make shit up for no reason?
Go ahead.
I think it's grade 6. These girls made fun of me and they're like, you got a really big forehead. And I was like, I was in an accident. And they were like, what do you mean? And I was like, when I was a kid, I was pushed into a fireplace and it burned the hair back and it never grew back. So now I bet you feel really bad. And they did. One of them cried.
Oh my God. You are a terrible human being.
I don't know, man.
You are literally the nicest person I know. I'd call you the worst human being on earth.
Well, you know, they deserved it. They made fun of my giant five head. All right. I know you hate this match, and I do too, but like, why? Give me your
it's
reasons.
So bad.
It's so all bad. Right.
So first off, Eric Bischoff is the referee, and he looks a million years old.
He's got all gray hair right now.
He just stopped dyeing it black. And, you know, like, that's respectable. I think that as people get older, if you start dyeing your hair, like, who the fuck are you fooling? You know? Like, we all know that you're doing it. Like, no one dyes their hair and, like, gets away with it. Like, we all know you're dyeing your hair.
Yeah. I think the only people who even get away with it are the ones who do, like, the touch of gray, you know? Like, you can't fully commit to a brand new hair color. You got to be like, all right, like,
I'm telling you right now, once it starts turning, it's turning. I'm not dyeing it. I'm not doing anything. Whatever happens to my hair happens. If I have white hair by the time I'm 50, I have white hair by the time I'm 50. Like, that's just how it's going to be.
The match itself... they keep calling Hogan Terry Bollea. They keep...
Brother, I wanted to shoot somebody.
They keep saying, this is a big moment for Terry Bollea, which, as we all know from the Gawker trial, are two different people. Terry Bollea and Hulk Hogan, two very different people.
Hulk Hogan's hung like a horse. Terry Bollea is a below-average human being, or a man, or however the fuck he said it. He's like, you know... Hulk Hogan's got a 12-inch dick. But Terry Bollea is rocking a 4-inch warrior.
I have no good notes about this. Like, Hogan takes a weight belt off. That's like the first big thing
that
happens.
I don't have any good notes, but I have notes.
Hogan takes the weight belt off, and Bischoff takes it from him. Hogan then confronts him. Kidman gets the advantage. Bischoff just hands the belt to Kidman, and he whips Hogan with it. That's fun. That's a good time.
Yeah. You know, I love it when things happen that are not good for Hulk Hogan. I mean, look, at one point, Kidman uses Tori as a shield.
Yeah,
and, like,
he
pushes
does that
her
too.
Into Hogan so he can attack him. And, like you mentioned, there's the whipping with the belt. Bischoff just stops, just doesn't count pins for Hogan.
Just doesn't count pins. Just like, no, I'm out. I got to go.
At one point, Hogan hip tosses Kidman out of the ring.
Clean
and
out
that
of the
shit
ring.
Had to hurt. That shit had to have fucking hurt.
Yeah, that's not a good time.
Like, he took a back bump over the top rope to the outside.
We get at one point Hogan gets the Hulk up, right? Like, oh goody, it's time for the Hulk up. Big boot. They pan to they show a shot of a kid in the crowd who like pump fakes ripping his shirt. He has a Hogan shirt on and he's like, "Hey, I paid good money for this. I'm gonna keep it on."
Have you ever Hogan ripped a shirt?
Yes.
Yeah, when I was a kid, whenever my brother and I had like an old shirt that was about to get thrown out, we would Hogan rip it.
Absolutely. You have to. You have to.
My mom was always like, "Why are you doing that?" And this was the point in time where we weren't allowed to watch wrestling. We'd still do it, but we weren't allowed to. And because my mom worked nights, so she would come back and like, especially Smack, like I was more SmackDown guy. Like SmackDown was like 8 to 10, you know, like it was done by the time she was back. Same thing with Raw. Raw was only 2 hours at this point.
The glory days.
Oh, the beauty. And so, like, you know, she was like, "What the fuck is going on here? Like, why are you guys always doing this?" And my brother had to, like, come up with an excuse. And I think one time he said, "We saw it in an Arnold movie."
I believe that.
And my mom just had to be fine with it. Because no matter how much effort she could put into preventing us from watching violent things, I like my dad started showing me Arnold Schwarzenegger movies probably in the womb. So,
yeah, it's just like touch the belly, like this is Predator.
Like Commando, Commando still to this day is probably the movie I've seen the most.
I mean,
my dad literally wore out the VHS.
So Hogan clocks Bischoff, does the leg drop because Bischoff got in the way when he's doing the leg drop. Stops Bischoff with a chair, turns the chair on Bischoff and Kidman. And then Hogan, if you didn't know, a long lost resident of Dudleyville, goes and gets two tables.
Have you ever seen Hulk Hogan use a table, much
never
less go get
in
one?
In my life, have I
I've
seen
never even
this.
Seen him use the announce table, much less like.
I've never seen him eat. He's never been at a table before in his life.
I don't know. You did. Whoa. Clearly, you didn't watch the sex tape.
No,
sets up Bischoff. Kidman rocks him from behind with the chair. After a long delay, there's a near fall. Hogan kicks the chair. So Bischoff grabs Hogan up, like wraps his arms around him, stands him up so Kidman can rock him in the chair. Kidman then gets the chair kicked back into him by Hogan. Hogan then mule kicks Bischoff, grabs him, power bombs him through a table. Rate the Hulk Hogan power bomb.
It's not bad, and that makes me kind of sad.
It's really hard to fuck up a power bomb.
Yeah, it makes me sad. Hogan,
well, no, you didn't give a rating. Yeah, give it rating, Evan.
6.2.
6.2. Ooh.
Yeah,
it's like a 5.5 for me. Anyways. Hogan grabs another table for some reason, even though he had previously grabbed a second table.
He can't
could just use
ring.
That one.
The leg is
he
up.
He cannot get it in the ring.
He cannot figure out how to navigate. The leg is up and it's stuck on the rope, but also the edge of the table is under the apron and he can't figure it out. He's been bamboozled.
Grabs another table. Kidman beats him with the fucking chair. Kidman puts Hogan on the table, goes up for a top rope splash. Hulk moves out of the way. Kidman goes crashing through the table. After a whole like kerfuffle, there's like a big like, oh, what the fuck is going on now? Horace Hogan comes back out. By the way, a Horace? They couldn't give this man like he couldn't be Harold, Harry Hogan. Some.
I'm gonna double check to see if that is his real name.
Bro, even if it is, like, come on. What is, also, you know how, like, Harold is Harry? All this other stuff? Like, what is the nickname for Horace?
I don't know. Ask is Horace Grant. Horsey. Nay. His real name is Michael. So, that's...
Oh, my God.
That's, yep.
Michael Bollea. He's out here. Hogan... It goes for a cover on Kidman, who again just crashed and burned through a table. Bischoff is still out cold, so what Horace does is he grabs Bischoff's arm, and much like what the fuck was that pay-per-view where Steve Austin faced Dude Love, he just uses the arm to count the pin. Shout out to the 25. It's 25 years. Like, as of like last week was the anniversary, I think, since that match.
Ridiculous. Two things after this match. One, the New Blood versus Millionaires Club storyline only lasts 3 months.
It was supposed to be this, what now?
It was supposed to be this big thing for WCW, like taking the new era. It lasted 3 months. Also a reminder, Hogan looked like this in the year 2000 and was talking about having a match at WrestleMania 40. 24 more years after this match, he wanted to do more wrestling. No, you don't get to anymore. You get to retire. It's done. You're finished. Let's take a break. When we get back, we are looking at Billy Kidman in WWE. Back from the break, and Billy Kidman was one of the lucky 25 whose contracts were brought over from WCW when they were purchased by WWE. He did do a little bit of work in the Invasion. He was part of the Alliance. They considered him a tweener, but then he actually got hurt. He did manage to unify, though, the Cruiserweight and Light Heavyweight Championships. Because he won the Cruiserweight Championships from Gregory Helms on the first WCW match on SmackDown. And then, do you know who he beat to unify the titles?
Who would have been the Light Heavyweight Champion at that time? Was it Dean Malenko?
It was X-Pac.
Oh.
It was X-Pac. Damn. Yes. I believe he got hurt and missed some of the end of the Invasion angle. Let's double check that. Yes, he did. He did get hurt during the Invasion thing, so he didn't get to do as much. But then he came back, turned face, was drafted to SmackDown, and that's where we go next. It is Survivor Series 2002, and he is challenging Jamie Noble for the Cruiserweight Championship.
Jamie Noble in his full Trailer Park Trash era. Absolutely. With Nydia, all this stuff. A little bit of a treat for the YouTube here.
Yes, your cat is moving. It's fantastic.
My cat is repositioning herself on the perch behind me.
Let's talk about the fact that this is the debut of Billy Kidman's theme song in WWE. Like this new version, which is, and I will hear no slander, fantastic. It's awesome. No. Do not undersell it. Do you know who it's by? Do you know who does Billy Kidman's theme here?
It's Uncle Ruckus.
I'm 90% sure, at least this is what I was told, is that it was by DMX.
No. No fucking shot.
It was by Jim Johnson, obviously. But yeah, I think that was a rumor that one of my friends started at school. And we were all like, no. Anyways.
I was gonna say. Also, why the fuck did I say Uncle Ruckus?
Uncle Ruckus. So let's talk about Billy Kidman's the theme, the lyrics, the poetry it paints. Because you can run if you want to, but you can't hide. They say that a couple times.
Oh.
I see you don't know who you're dealing with, but I don't have it all. I'm a lunatic because this society, they label me a threat, but I'm just getting started. I'm not finished yet. Now, not the type of lyrics I would associate with Billy Kidman.
It's like those white suburban kids that like, mind you, this is... To a T, my friend Freddie. Hi, Freddie. You're not listening to this, but hi, Freddie. He is from he's from Cape Cod. Evan, you know what the Cape is.
I've heard of the Cape.
The Cape is just white people from a middle class to middle class and up society. Very, very rural, obviously. It's very seasonal. It's only really popping from May to like September. And these kids, they just listen to fucking Gunna and Migos, but like outside of the gym, and like fucking, you know, like just the most fucking rap people you can think of. Like it's just all like gang violence and money and hoes and all that stuff. I'm not knocking rap music. I love rap music.
Yeah.
But like, don't get me wrong. I'm not even knocking the Migos. I love the Migos. Love them. R.I.P. To my just boy,
seem,
Takeoff.
Just seems strange to be listening to it in Cape Cod.
But like, I remember one time he sent us a Spotify rap, bro, and it was like just Gunna, Migos, 21 Savage, and there was another person in there that I couldn't. But my jaw hit the ground when I heard it. It was like fucking. Oh, it was Young Boy. I think it was NBA Young Boy. And I was speaking like, what is
of,
happening?
Speaking of things
right
that
now?
Will drop your jaw. So like, I remember the beginning lyrics because that's all you really know from WWE theme songs, right? if you go later in the song, I'm going to just read you the lyrics.
Go on.
All of a sudden, you're starting to feel sleepy. But in these streets, when you doze off, you wake up with your clothes off. A shame feeling so lost. Whoa. You see my crew, you know my style. Victory is mine, you're going down. Wait, wait. We're just going to gloss past. I'm sorry. We're just going to speed past that.
Wait a minute. Whoa, whoa, whoa now. Is this, you know, Evan, and you have the gall to tell me that this man didn't do heroin.
What did you think of the match with Jamie Noble?
I thought this was a fun match, but you could clearly tell they were rushing to get as much shit in as possible.
Yeah. They're the opener.
They were only given.
And it's tough to be the opener on Survivor Series because you know how long the Survivor Series matches are going to go.
Yeah, like they were only given like 7 or 8 minutes for this match, bell to bell. Kidman immediately goes for a bunch of covers. He's lost to Noble 2 times. He's been pinned by him twice previous to this match. Noble hits like a weird looking swinging neck breaker for a near fall. He does that like move where you extend the arms back and you put the knee on the spine.
He's focusing on the back of Kidman a lot.
Yes, he goes for hits a suicide dive at one point here, which I was like, oh, Jamie Noble's athletic. Forgot about that.
Sneaky athlete. Yeah.
We covered Jamie Noble. Did we do Jamie Noble on an episode?
I think so. Let me double check that.
Because I vaguely remember some of his ROH stuff, but that also could have just been like Danielson and other ROH guys episodes.
I think we definitely covered Noble.
Anyways, Kidman hits an Ushiguroshi for near fall, and I was like, oh, so that's where AJ Styles got up.
I popped. I saw an Ushiguroshi, and I lost my mind.
He follows that up with a Falcon Arrow for a near fall too, and I was like, oh my man, he's in his bag right now. He does the AJ Styles. I had to look up what this move was called in AJ Styles like wiki, like the fandom wiki.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure it out. Like, it doesn't have a name. It just has a description name pretty much. So it's a belly to back wheelbarrow face buster.
That sounds right. That describes everything that happens. And no, we haven't covered Jamie Noble. He's made two appearances, though. One in the Daniel episode, and the other was in the Greg Helms episode.
Shout out to Jamie Noble, a man who will absolutely be getting an episode soon. So he goes up to the top. He goes for a shooting star press. Kidman does. Nydia then pulls Noble out of the ring before Kidman could go. So instead of just doing a shooting star press, he decides, you know what? Fuck it. Dives from the top to the outside onto Noble.
Slingshot leg drop into the ring after by Kidman for a 2 count. He's running the ropes. Nydia holds his leg. Nydia really valuable. No, Jamie Noble didn't know what he had with Nydia.
Yeah, he really didn't.
She did everything for him.
A true ride or die.
True. From the trailer park to the moon. That's Cameron Grimes' gimmick. So he pulls her to the apron. She slaps Kidman. Kidman then moves as Noble charges her and knocks her off the apron. Kidman then with a big spine buster, but only gets a 2 count.
Nah. That's a clash of the Titus right there. It's a sit-out spine buster.
It is, but it's not Titus. So it's a spine buster.
It's a clash of the Titus. That's what I called it the whole time. Noble hits a tiger bomb.
Yeah.
With a stack.
Yeah, sort of good.
For a near fall. He goes up. Kidman ends up hitting a top rope face buster. He set it up like it was going to be a DDT, but then he doesn't end up hitting a DDT. It's very much a face buster by the end. Noble gets a really cool top rope elevated DDT for a near fall, which looks fucking sick.
Not just a draping DDT, but from the top rope, and he lands on the top of his head.
Yes, like purely on the crowd. Kidman hits an enziguri, and then we get the finish of the match, Evan.
Nydia distracts Kidman when he's on the top rope. He manages to fight Noble off, push him back down. After Nydia also goes down. Shooting star press, he's the Cruiserweight champ. This is his 7th time winning the championship because the lineage continues from WCW. Who was the only person with more Cruiserweight championships?
Oh my God. Is it someone obvious?
Yes.
Is it Ray?
It's Ray.
Okay.
Now, Billy Kidman is 4th on combined days as Cruiserweight champion at 321. Who, obviously, Ray is also ahead of him. Who are the other 2 men ahead of him?
Combined champions?
Combined days as champion.
Is Jericho there?
No. Jericho
is... I feel like Jericho had like a super long reign.
Jericho's sixth.
Okay. Malenko?
Malenko is not up there. Malenko's eighth.
Hoovy.
Hoovy is also not up there. He's 12th.
I'm bad at this. Eddie Guerrero?
Nope. Though that's close.
Chavo Guerrero.
Chavo is third with 431. There's one more. And we mentioned him just a couple minutes ago.
Oh, God.
Very popular in WWE. Had a couple different gimmicks.
Oh, Greg Helms.
Greg Helms. 529 days as Cruiserweight Champion.
Damn.
I didn't remember. I'm sure you did, because this is right in your wheelhouse. I did not remember that Kidman had a tag team with Paul London. Did not remember for the life of me.
Could you not know about the second fastest tag team in the history of pro wrestling?
Because when I think of a Paul London tag team, I think of Brian Kendrick.
The fastest tag team.
The fastest tag team. They won the tag titles. They beat the Dudley Boys for the tag titles on July 8th, 2004. It's crazy. And then
yeah, I know.
Kidman turned heel, which was based off a real life event. Do you remember the event?
He had heat with Paul London, didn't he?
Didn't necessarily have heat with Paul London. Not that that wasn't the reason they turned him heel. They turned him heel because in August of 2004, they were doing a match and Kidman did a shooting star press that caused an unintentional concussion to Chavo. And then they built into the storyline where he became hesitant to do the shooting star press. He was like, I don't want to do that. And he instead climbed down the turnbuckle and walked to the back, leaving London to defend the titles alone against, you're going to be so happy when you remember the names, Kenzo Suzuki and Rene Dupree, who then beat them for the tag titles.
Best mixed match tag team in the history of pro wrestling, Kenzo Suzuki and Rene Dupree.
I would like to show you Team Hell No. Just put them over here.
I would like to show you the middle finger, because that's not true.
London and Kidman had a match against No Mercy. Kidman defeated London before doing the shooting star press. And then this completed his heel turn because he started to blame the fans for wanting him to be more brutal with his in-ring style. So they're like, hey, let's use it to turn Kidman heel. And so that's where we are with our last match. Is Kidman is a heel as part of this fatal four-way at Survivor Series 2004. It's Kidman, it's Rey Mysterio, it's Chavo Guerrero, and it's the current champ, Spike Dudley, who is in his...
Yeah, you know who I did not expect to be a heel? Spike Dudley.
You don't remember asshole era Spike Dudley?
No, I have zero recollection of this. You know what it was? Was he on Raw? Was this when the Cruiserweights were able to be on Raw?
No, he was drafted to SmackDown. And then he started calling himself like the boss of the Dudley Boys. Like he was like the brains. He was like the Seth Rollins architect of Dudleyville.
Like he was the pinky.
He was the pinky, yes, and the brain. He was all of them.
Pinky. No, he wanted to be the brain, but little did he know he was the pinky.
It was, and he went on a reign that I think was like 130 something odd days.
Yeah, it's pretty long.
It's pretty good. This match is not a car crash. But it's a lot. There's a lot of things happening. A lot of moving parts.
Yeah, a lot of things happening. I mean, they pair off right away. Chavo immediately goes after Kidman. Spike, I guess, just has to pair off with Ray at that point. And then Spike starts working with Kidman to rock Chavo. And at one point, Spike has Kidman hold Chavo in the corner, which never fucking works. Never works. The person never holds up the guy in the corner. So when he goes to hit a move, probably a drop kick or something, Kidman just drop kicks him flush in the face.
It's one of the best drop kicks I've seen in going through all of our matches, at least the last maybe this calendar year. Going through all these matches,
I could tell you in a few weeks it won't be anymore.
You're right, and we'll talk about that. That's a good teaser for who we're covering next. Stick around. Kidman face busted by Ray. He gets closing out of the ring. Kidman's on the outside for a while. We get some just quality knuckle lock wrestling from Ray and Chavo. Chavo wants a powerbomb. Ray gets the Hurricane Rana. Spike jumps Ray from behind because he's an asshole. I actually really like Spike here.
The boos are crazy for Spike right now. Spike.
It's great.
Double clothesline with Chavo. Ray knocks Kidman to the apron from the top rope, then hits a Hurricane Rana from the top. So he jumps off the top rope. Kidman's on the apron. Hurricane Rana to the outside.
Yeah, really good.
Ray was doing his like bulldog setup where he does like the wheelbarrow and then gets up, hits the bulldog. He does that. He was doing that to Chavo, but Chavo just tosses him to the outside and he ends up hitting a seated senton onto Kidman.
Just yeet. And then Chavo with a dive onto Kidman and Ray. Spike goes for a plancha as well, but Ray and Chavo part the seas and just leave. And so Spike just planches to nothing.
I love how Michael Cole goes, Ray and Chavo parted the Red Sea.
It's great. Kidman, this is going to sound weird. This is the best character work in a match Kidman does the entire time.
I mean, that doesn't sound weird. That's absolutely true. This is like incredible what I'm seeing.
But I think
this is the most committed to a bit that I've seen him.
I think this is the thing that's weird about it is when you look at it, aside from no longer being on heroin, how has Kidman's character evolved really up until this point?
Just hasn't. I don't really think he like all just alternated between being a white meat baby face and a dick.
Yeah, you're kind of right.
That's pretty much it. Like he didn't have any in between. There was no like real growth. He was just a white meat baby face or a dick. Also, we need to talk about this because it's true. So he chopped off his hair at this point.
Yes,
he's got shorter hair. And he really looks like an average human being version of the British Bulldog. Like 100% looks like Davey Boy Smith, but like deflated. It's fucking crazy. It's all I could think about. It is all I could think about. Like 99 Davey Boy if you just popped him. That is what Billy Kidman looks like.
Yeah. I see it. I see what you're talking about.
It's all I can think of. It is literally the only thing I can think of. Okay. So back to the rest. Kidman starts becking off of Chavo at one point here. Chavo just starts fucking him up. Yeah. Like, that is the only way to describe what is happening. He is fucking this dude up. Spike on the outside tosses Ray into the steps. He breaks up a pin in the middle of the ring, starts messing up Chavo. He hits an atomic drop and then turns that into a clothesline onto Chavo. Ray breaks up the pin. Ray does that like slide out of the ring belly first thing that he does, the slip and slide.
It's so fun. Yeah.
That must have sucked when he doesn't wear a shirt. Like, that must suck.
Yeah. God, I don't want to have to deal with that. That sounds
the
bad.
The burn. Yeah. Also, you have to apply like a double layer of fucking oil to do that.
That's right. We get a Tower of Doom spot. Kidman is in the under spot with Chavo, who suplexes Spike. Kidman with, they call it a K-bomb, which is just the Clash of the Titus.
Clash of the Titus.
Kidman drags Masira to the top rope for a shooting star press. Chavo pushes him off the turnbuckle. Bye-bye.
Into the fucking barricade. He's donezo. Yeah.
Spike with a chop block to Chavo. Spike goes for a Dudley dog on Ray, but Ray counters it by dropping him into perfect position for the 619. Ray,
which was so sick. That is one of the coolest counters.
It was a really good counter. Ray wants the West Coast pop after the 619. Kidman pulls him down during the springboard, which again is something that I feel like you have to trust the other person a lot to do because that sucks. Yanked out of the sky.
Get yeeted. Chavo hits a gory bomb to Spike, a move that we don't see very often, but I love the gory bomb.
It takes a lot of setup, but every time you set it up, it's like, that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm like, ugh. Plus, like the history behind it.
Strap. Like, it takes plus, a while to set up, but like, it's really cool.
You know why we don't see it? Because it's a Guerrero move. Like, you can't be a non-Guerrero using it, I feel like, and there's no current Guerreros in wrestling. So,
that makes sense. Really sad. Yeah, there are no current Guerreros in wrestling.
Well, I mean, who knows? The next generation, maybe if Shaw has a kid, has a child, hopefully, and you know that child decides to go into wrestling, maybe the Guerrero lineage might come back. But as of now, there isn't really a Guerrero in wrestling.
Sad. Kidman with a slingshot leg drop to Chavo during the pin. Ray head scissors Kidman out of the ring, and during that, Spike rolls onto Chavo, gets the pin, and retains the Cruiserweight Championship.
Good stuff.
Kidman was released from his WWE contract in July of 2005. He stated the release was due to an argument with management over the decision to stop booking wrestlers on first-class flights overseas. That was part of his problem. He was on the independents for a while, worked in IWA, apparently did have a tour in Australia where he had a match with Bryan Danielson. Very interesting. In 2007. Yeah.
I don't know about this.
It was quite interesting. Also, there was a match. I just love seeing the way that, like, again, like, guys on different parts of their career. July 8th, 2007, Kidman teamed up with X-Pac to crown new NWA World Tag Champions and lost to Carl Anderson and Joey Ryan, a name that we have not said in forever for good reason.
And probably a name that will not be said again.
We'll never say again. Kidman would return to WWE in 2007. He was a trainer in FCW for 07 and 08. And in February of 08, he wrestled his last match against Afa Jr., a.k.a. Manu.
Oh.
Yeah, so the guy
who trained him. Shout out to Manu.
Yeah. And then he was rehired as a producer in 2010. And he was a producer for a long, long time. He showed up a couple times as, like, the officials from the back coming, you know, to try to break up a thing. Getting F5'd by Brock Lesnar and shit like that. He was furloughed during April of 2020, but did return to the company in September of the same year.
Is he still with WWE?
I don't know. I can't tell. I tried looking it up, and I can't tell if he still is there or not.
I mean, if there's nothing stating otherwise, he probably is still there.
Yeah, I would assume so. But what do you think?
Hey, shout out to Billy Kidman.
Yeah, man, like, he's turned it into a full career in the business. So, like, listen, kudos to him.
You know, I'm sure he had hard times, Mr. Oh no, international first class flights. But, like, bro was married to Tori Wilson for time. You know, like, it's not even like they got married in 99 and then were divorced by 2001. Like, they got divorced in, like, 2007, 8, whenever that fucking was. Like, he was with her for a time. Like, shout out. But also, like, a fruitful career, you know? Like, he's...
Yeah.
When I think of cruiserweight wrestling, Billy Kidman's probably one of the first, like, 5-6 names that I think about, honestly, just because he was prominent in the cruiserweight division at a time where the cruiserweight division was on for me. Like, I don't really... Plus, yeah, I think of Juventud Guerrero.
He's in the WCW and the WWE cruiserweight divisions. Like, he was a stalwart in both.
Yeah, like, for obviously, the first people I think of are, like, Ray. Dean Malenko,
Eddie.
Probably Juventud Guerrero and Ultimo Dragon. But Billy Kidman's right there, too, in my mind, just because, like, he's one of the cruiserweights when the cruiserweight division was, like, popping, at least in that early era of WWE, that I actually saw, you know? So, like, he's good, you know? Like, I know I diss his Shooting Star Press and all that stuff, but I mean, like, make no bones about it. Billy Kidman is a very good and talented wrestler.
Yeah.
Like, very talented wrestler. His character work wasn't great, but as
I
far as...
I don't think they gave him a character. They didn't really... He was just a guy who was happy to be here and wrestle. And then sometimes he was a dick and sometimes he was nice.
Yeah, sometimes he was a dick with a girl. The other time he was just, like, a nice guy. But no, man, like, I thought that, like, honestly, part of the reason why I chose that promo compilation more than anything is because you could see Mean Gene really trying to get him to show personality, especially with that chicks thing. Yeah. Like, he, I guess, hockey media trained it or whatever. But he was still, like, you saw a little... like inflection points in that thing where, like, you know, there's a little bit of his inner, you know, personality coming out in those. So they're not terrible, but obviously he's not a great promo in that regard. But, like, I just thought that there's a lot of charisma in the ring. You could tell probably not as much in the earlier stuff, but, you know, there were always little spurts where he would just go on these, like, little hot streaks where he would, like, string moves together, and it looked really cool. Like, I could see how he got to be super over at one point there in the cruiserweight division.
Absolutely.
But I could also see why he never reached that next phase, like a lot of the cruiserweights ended up doing, because he just didn't have that charisma. He didn't really have that thing that really set him apart from a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think you're right. I think he was fantastic. I think he developed into a very reliable dancing partner, you know, and you know, you just need those guys, and he can go out and he can wow the crowd. He had so many different moves in his arsenal too. Like, he could pull out a bunch of different stuff. We saw that where his moveset was ever evolving through these matches, but you're right. Sometimes the guys just, like, aren't going to be the ones to take the next step. 'Cause there's only so many times people can be world champ, you know? There's only so many times people can be
IC champ.
I mean,
it's not even a world champ. It's just a move to the heavyweight division. Like, there's only so many people that can be there. And, you know, you always need to, well, I mean, especially at that point, like, you need a cruiserweight division. Like, guys just have to stay cruiserweights.
I also think that if you ask anybody who watched wrestling in the late 90s through the early 2000s, everybody fucking loved the cruiserweight division. SmackDown was cool. It had the SmackDown 6 and it had the cruiserweight division, and that was it. Those were its things. And you'd watch and you're like, this is so different and it's so awesome. Yes, wrestling has kind of evolved where a lot of people can do a lot of the same things, but at the time, you're only seeing, you know, Jamie Noble and Billy Kidman doing these things. You're only seeing Paul Lennon and Brian Kendrick doing these things. And that's valuable and it's really good. Yeah. So shout out to Billy Kidman, man. Great career. Great that he worked for the Dub for that long.
That he's a producer.
Yeah, it makes sense. He's clearly able to put it all together. So,
like, when you think of the guys who became producers backstage, like Dean Malenko, Jamie Noble, Joey Mercury, guys like that, like, he absolutely fits in with that group as far as, like, guys who were super, super talented in the ring, maybe showed flashes here and there with their character work of potentially going places, but never really did because they weren't able to keep it that long. But you could tell, bell to bell, these guys are some of the highest quality wrestlers you would get. And that's why they are standouts as producers, because they know that's how to put together wrestling matches.
They got the skills to pay the bills. All right. Wherever you are listening, you should be sure to hit that follow button and rate 5 stars. If you're watching on YouTube, hit like, hit subscribe. We got all of our extra YouTube content. Earlier this week, you would have seen our episode on Trish Stratus for Wrestler Revisited. So go and watch that. Watch all of our crossbody drafts, all of our YouTube exclusive content at Crossbody of Work. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Crossbody of Work. Where can you follow Javier? He'll tell you right now.
I'm on the Twitter machine at JMello Sports. It's in the bio of the main account. Just click my name, click the follow button, and then, you know, I don't know, shoot me a message or something.
You can follow me there as well at It's Evan Gomes, ITSEVANGOMES. Go to fullpresswrestling.com, cop the merch, support the boys. Actually, that's Full Press Shop. Full Press Wrestling is where you can find all the links for this week. The recommendation of the week. If I'm going to say that one of these is the recommendation, I'm probably going to say
it's not the Hogan match.
It's not the Hogan match. I'm probably going to say it's the Jamie Noble match.
I was going to say the same thing. I really, really like that match.
I think it's the Jamie Noble match. So go to fullpresswrestling.com. You'll see a link for all of our episodes. You can find all of the links for all the other matches. You can go and listen to the boys talk about all these other wrestlers. Speaking of wrestlers we talk about, it is important to tell you who our next episode is, because it is the start of our three-parter. We've gone 20 weeks between three-parters, and it's very important. Javier's doing the pose as a spoiler for our YouTube listeners. We are covering the career of one Randall Keith Orton, from debut as a cocky newcomer to now, all of the RKOs, all of the Randy Keiths. It's going to be a great time.
Randall Keith, Randall Keith, Randall Keith. I am very excited. I cannot wait. I'm more so excited for early Orton. That first part is going to be so much fun. It is
legend
going
killer,
to be
baby.
Legend killer. It's going to be new. Like, it's going to be like peak of athlete Orton, where he's doing fucking crossbodies and shit before he was like, yeah, fuck that. And became more of a methodical worker, which is great as well. It's a three part that I'm more so looking forward to, because look, man, say what you want about Randy Orton, the guy is one of the best workers ever.
The exact quote that JR would use all the time: if you built a wrestler from scratch, they would look like Randy Orton. Like, if you had to build a perfect wrestler from scratch, they would look like Orton. The mind for the business. Plus, we're going to get Legend Killer Orton. We're going to get RK-Bro. Everything in between, including
everything
when
between.
He's a complete psycho.
We're going to get 2009 Orton, which goes fucking famous on Twitter every month for some reason.
It's because it's really, really good. And I guarantee you, it's going to be a lot of John Cena. So if you like John Cena, you're also going to like this too. Join us next week as we dive into the early career of Randy Orton for the first part of our three-parter. And it's now time for everyone's favorite part of the podcast. Javier, any final words for the people?
This week on Life Advice with Javier, it's actually very practical. It's not just, well, for me, it's traveling related, because I will be traveling this week. Actually, as of when this episode comes out, I'm back.
That's true. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's more so for those who are planning travels in the summer, maybe into the fall, all this other stuff. When you get your tickets, one key thing that I cannot stress enough is adding, it, this isn't even just for traveling. It's for like, it also works for events, whether that be concerts, sports, all that stuff. Especially if you have an iPhone, add the tickets to your wallet. I cannot stress enough how much of an importance that is. If there is no Wi-Fi or like the service sucks, especially if you're like going somewhere that it's like a concert or a sports event where there's going to be at least 30,000 people plus in that at that thing, like you need to add this to your wallet. You cannot rely on the service to like load this thing up. I don't give a fuck if you have the peak of the peak service. I guarantee you there's going to be some sort of issues pulling up your email, getting the ticket up, going to Safari or Google or whatever the hell you're using to as a browser to open these up. Just add them to your wallet. Just have it there. You just have to boom, boop. Doesn't matter if you could have zero service at all. You could be in a remote desert island off the coast of fucking Australia. Does not matter.
Have
you
it
show that to whoever the fuck. You show that to whoever the fuck, it's going to work. I cannot stress that enough. Make sure that you freaking get your check-in times right. Check in as soon as you get the fucking email. You usually get it 24 hours before your flight. As soon as you get that email 24 hours before your flight, check in. You do not want to dilly-daddle with that. You do not. You want to be as prepared as humanly possible going into the airport so you can get right through security, sit your ass in your chair until your gates opens up, get on the flight, make the transition as easy as possible, people. Just do it. It's so simple.
How many hours pre-flight are you at the airport?
Okay, so our flight's at 9.
Okay, what time are you getting to the airport?
On Monday. I'll probably get there between 7 and 7:30.
Okay.
I'm big on being like an hour, hour and a half. That's what I'm at.
All right.
It also depends on the time. Like
I'm a 2 hour guy usually.
It like again, it depends on the time. If your flight's at like 3, like that's different. I feel like you have to get there a little, like maybe 1.5 to 2 hours, just because like there's definitely gonna be heads there. But if it's like a morning or like a late night flight, like I feel like you're good if you just spend an hour and a half. Like I've never spent like a crazy amount of time in security is why. Like I think the most I've ever spent in a security line is probably like a half hour.
That's fair. I think, yeah, it all depends on like where you're flying out of to. Like if you're at, you know, like you're, I'm assuming you're at Logan. Like you're going to be, that's a busy airport. Like if you're coming from like a regional airport, you're not, it's not going to be.
But it's also a big airport, you know.
That's true. It's got a lot going on.
Like, it's huge. Like, there's so many security lines and all this other stuff. Like, you're fine. I feel like it's never going to be crazy. They know what they're doing. It's one of the, like, 5 to 10 biggest airports in the country, you know? Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Now, it's probably different if you're traveling out of, like, JFK or LaGuardia or LAX or something where it's just crowded 24/7. Then, hey, disregard everything I say. Show up 3 hours before your flight. But if you're traveling out of somewhere that's, like, big but not massive, like I don't know, maybe like here in Boston or like fucking the Colorado, the Denver airport or somewhere in Atlanta or Chicago, O'Hare, you know, like you're probably good showing up an hour and a half before.
Yeah,
just saying,
get there on time, enjoy your flight. By the time Javier's back, he'll have lots of things to tell you about his trip, which is exciting. We'll see you next week to talk about Randall Keith Orton. We'll talk to you then.
Randall Keith, Randall Keith, Randall, Randall Keith. No, 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 no.